Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch. Hey, hope y'all are doing well on this beautiful Friday here in Southern California. Kind of glad I'm here on the West Coast, not trudging through the snow. Although, it's kind of fun for the holidays and all. But anyway, we are broadcasting live out of LA Talk Radio's beautiful Southern California studios. Cool, irreverent, entertaining talk right here on the couch with Dr. Michelle. And today I'm going to be answering a lot of your emails that you sent me, actually. Seems like I've gotten a lot over the past several weeks. I don't know, maybe it's because of the holidays. A lot of people are getting together with families. And they're going, oh my God, I can't deal with it. I can't deal sitting at that table. Or doing all the activities around some of my, dysfunctional family members. What's up with that? How can I deal with these people? How can I be nice to my drunk uncle, who's always embarrassing everybody and mean? How can I deal with that sibling who's such a jerk, was always mean to me growing up, has issues? So we're talking about a lot of things today. They have to do with different subjects that you wanted help or suggestions with. I do want to remind you that we do not have a therapeutic relationship. I don't do therapy over the radio, per se. But what I can do is give you some suggestions and ideas that you can choose to consider. Okay? You don't have to follow them. You know, you can do what you want, but just throwing out some ideas here for my expertise. You ask. So I'll try to help. So we're going to be helping folks with a lot of relationship issues, as I always do when I do the free-for-all Fridays and open up the lines and open up my emails. So we're going to be looking at some of the emails that asked questions such as, what are some of the obstacles that get in the way of good marriages? That's a biggie in my practice that I see. How someone can deal with an abusive partner, specifically a girlfriend. What are some important things to look for in a good partner? Those are always interesting, right? And some personal questions also I'm looking at, like, why don't people like me? That's a tough one. It's really tough when someone comes in to see me and says, why don't people like me? Well, I don't know. I have no idea. Let's talk. Why do you think people don't like you? Is it you who thinks people don't like you? You get it. Also, we're going to talk about how to control your stress and how to forgive someone who has hurt you. That's a really biggie, too. How to forgive people. You know, we see, I don't know if you watch these ID shows. I'm fascinated sometimes because sometimes I do criminal and personality profiling. So I really kind of like to watch how detectives research people and discover who done it through forensics and also circumstantial evidence, which is pretty strong sometimes. But what happens is, I really like to look at forgiveness because a lot of people in those shows say, I forgave my husband's murderer. I went to see that person in prison and told them that I forgave them. Oof, that's really tough to do. Anyway, we'll be talking about that as well. Lots of other things, too, if you like. If you have questions or issues you'd like to ask, you can email me. And I'm taking a lot of the emails off my gmail.com, which is straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And, of course, if you want to call in live, that number here is 323-203-0815. Los Angeles number, 323-203-0815. So let's get started. let's, without further ado, get rocking here. So let's look at an email here from Sherry. She says, I'm 27 and engaged to this wonderful 30-year-old guy. We plan to marry next spring. And we're considering premarital counseling, but wanted to ask you what you think are some of the most common things that mess up a marriage. Well, I like that. Instead of what can I do, what's good stuff, what can mess us up? So I'll look at that directly, and let me think about some of these things that I see that are very common pitfalls that newlyweds get into. You know what I'm saying? So what I see is each partner, we just come into that journey of marriage with our own set of directions. So we have a lot of assumptions. I see this all the time about roles and expectations, about how to spend time and money, and really deeply held beliefs about a lot of things. You know, religion, children. And of course, we all have baggage, especially if we're, you know, 40-something. Sometimes we have kids, divorced, things like that. So a lot of psychologists, like myself, we say that it takes a lot of desire, honest communication. It's kind of difficult. You got to work hard to move that relationship from the romantic stage, you know, because, I mean, we're all on good behavior at the beginning, and the fireworks are going off, and it's romantic. And I'm not being a downer. I mean, you can have that romantic stage forever. But, you know, the reality sets in. Reality. Yes. So you can sort of get off to a good start, Sherry, by avoiding what I think are five pretty major pitfalls that I see. First of all, a lot of couples really insist on the way things should be done. So they say things like, my family does it this way. That's the way I've always done it. You know, so couples a lot of times underestimate the influence of their families. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is we're always sort of assuming that this is the way things are going to be done, the way we did it growing up. So you have to discuss these things, you know, and know each other well enough to find out what the expectations are. Right? Sometimes they're even unconscious expectations, you know? So let me think of an example. You could say something like, I'm open and like to deal with things. But in your own family, when conflict arose, you shut down. So sometimes we have the best intentions to be one way, but then, you know, a coping strategy from our own family comes up and kind of messes up the thing we are. We're human. We're not perfect. So we can say things like that. I'm not perfect. And be flexible. So when your family does it this way, be willing to roll and not push your spouse into, we have to do things this way. Okay. Just be there. Right? His family sits down together around the dining room table for dinner, and her family scatters and grabs dinner on the run or, you know, sitting around the family room watching TV. I mean, it's always, we have different ways of doing things. So kind of come to agreements and compromise and things like that. Another pitfall I hear is marriage will make me happy. Not. Marriage, unless you have your own act together, is not going to make you happy. No one else is going to make you happy, you know. So if you come into a situation where you're kind of lonely and you have no friends, and oh gosh, maybe your wife-to-be feels inferior to her prettier, smarter, and wealthier sister, and both believe that their marriage is going to make them happy, that's not going to work. Again, you've got those early stages of relationships where everything's beautiful and wonderful and fun. And then you kind of really get to know each other and sort of your issues. So what you got to do is just not believe that marriage is going to make you happy. You've got to make you happy first. Be okay with who you are. Work on some of your issues and then go forth into discovering about each other. Another big pitfall I see is my partner's going to change. Or I'm going to change my partner. Years ago, had a client who assumed that her husband would stop having lunch with his ex-fiancé. Uh-huh. He hasn't, or didn't, as far as I remember, years ago. So the thing is you've got to know what to expect. And you've got to know that you're not going to change your partner in any way, especially their personality styles. You know what I'm saying? You've got to accept that person for who they are and not go, oh, I'm going to change him or I'm going to change her. I'm going to get her to start thinking this way or start living life this way. Nope. If they're doing things the same way and have been pervasive all their life, they're not going to change. Usually you don't go in to try to change somebody, period. So that's a big pitfall I see as well. Another thing is avoiding talking about hard issues because it's going to take the bloom off the romance. No. I mean, a lot of times I hear things like, I'm not going to tell them that once we have kids, I want to quit working. I'm not going to tell her right away that my company might relocate to Singapore, so we're going to have to get up and move. You know, we've got to talk about the hard issues. It's not going to take the bloom off the romance. We're going to keep it real so we can figure out what's going on and what we need to look forward to in the future. And another another thing that I see is talking about issues that are really kind of difficult. Her credit card debt, when to have kids, or even who should clean the toilet. And avoid the conflict around all those things at all costs. You can't avoid conflict. There's always conflict, but you got to find solutions. You got to find compromise. And if you can't compromise, you respect each other's belief systems and beliefs. But before you get married, Sherry, I would say go to marriage counseling, premarital counseling, they call it. Find a good one and just do it because it never hurts. Never hurts. Always good. Check it out. Because in a good premarital counseling session, you'll find out all these things about the other person. You know, can you be committed to each other through the ups and downs? Are you honest? Do you want to learn how to be a better person? Are you trusting this person 100%? Are you emotionally open? All those things. So you've got to work on those. But do see a premarital counselor. And I thank you so much for emailing me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, Sherry. Lovely to hear from you. If you guys have a question or comment, go for it. I'd love to hear from you on the email, straighttalkdoc@gmail. Today, what I'm doing is answering a lot of questions here to your emails on the couch. And we don't have a therapeutic relationship, but I'm just going to give you suggestions, some ideas. All righty. So I'm going to get into something else that I thought was really interesting because I do hear this really often in my practice, which is about how to forgive those who have hurt us. Whether it's a relationship or a parent or whatever in life, you know, it's really hard to forgive someone who has caused a lot of deep wounds. So this is a really good email. And I thank you, Andrew, for writing this. He says, I'm 42, have a great job and a super wife. Whoa. And an 8-year-old wonderful daughter. Good for you. I have managed to work on my self-esteem after growing up with an abusive alcoholic dad. He always criticized me, I was never good enough, and hit me with a belt whenever he thought I had done something wrong. It always hurt. My mom was passive and didn't defend me very often because she was afraid of him. I left home when I was 17 and made my own life. Now, although I talked to my mom, who finally got away from my abusive dad about 5 years ago, I haven't communicated much with my dad throughout the many years. He's never apologized for what he's done and supposedly is now in AA and sober. How can I forgive this cruel, angry, hateful father? Whoa. Now, that is a common one that I hear, and I get it. That is so tough to deal with. First of all, I want you to think about, and I don't know if you've done this before, Andrew, is, going to adult alcoholics Adults of alcoholic parents, right? Yeah, the Al-Anon groups are wonderful. They really do help you out a lot. Kind of understand the dynamics of how, you know, an alcoholic functions, where their mind's at, and how you played a role in that, and really helping, you know, come together to build your self-esteem and understand that. So, you know, it's a whole family dynamic we get into sometimes when we're the victims of an abusive parent who is an alcoholic or both. So I would really suggest that you, you know, go to those meetings. Al-Anon meetings are great. Adult children of alcoholic parents, great groups, do it. It is really difficult to forgive. And only you can do it when you're ready. You can't be pushed to it. You've got to really go for it on your own. So what makes it kind of hard is the way we define forgiveness, right? Lots of us think of forgiveness as meaning that we should say, all is forgotten and things will go back to what they were. Everything's perfect. It's all good. How can you forget the unforgettable? How can you shove it down, right? But, you know, to kind of enjoy the benefits of forgiving someone, you don't have to go that far. My suggestion is that all that's really required is that we make the decision to move forward and just kind of let go of the old hurts. We don't have to condone what's been done. We don't have to justify, per se. What's wrong is still wrong. It was wrong the way you were beat. It's wrong the way, you know, you had to experience probably, you know, as a child, a lot of scary things with an alcoholic father. We don't have to invite the person back into our lives or even be friendly with them if we want to draw boundaries, only if you're ready to do it. But what we have to do, I think, is allow ourselves to release all the negative emotions associated with that person, because it's cleansing and helps us. As long as we usually hold on to that pain, we're choosing to allow that person's past actions to continue to hurt us. And Andrew, I want to say that I'm so happy that you have found yourself a good family. Sounds like you have a wonderful wife, as you mentioned, a great kid, nice little girl there, rocking with your life. You went on, but you're still kind of holding on to that. So as long as you hold on to that pain, you're going to choose to allow him and give him the power to hurt you. So you can choose to stop that. So it's just, you know, there's ideas that I have, and I give exercises to people sometimes to let go of pain and just sort of start to regain your life. What we have to do is kind of retrain our brains for things, you know, reinforce, because we get pretty hardwired, those neurological patterns towards, I hate this guy, he's a jerk and an alcoholic and he used to beat me and I'll never forget him. Those are pretty hardwired in there now. So what I suggest people do sometimes is make a list of how this person has hurt you. All the ways. Go through it. He hurt me because. He hurt me when. And what I want you to do is write down those things, Andrew. You know, and you can even go to, I felt humiliated. How did you feel? What did he used to do? How did you feel? And then I want you to go to a quiet place where you can be alone and think of each of these situations. Kind of remember them. It's okay to feel the hurt. It's okay. All right? And then I want you to think about putting yourself in the other person's shoes. What do you think motivated them to behave the way they did? Were they hateful because they were abused? Probably. Do they suffer from mental disorder? A lot of times. Depression, anxiety, personality disorder. What fears and insecurities motivated their behavior? Right? And, of course, alcoholism. That's triggered his anger, probably. He wasn't the nice, happy drinker. He was an angry, abusive person. So what I want you to do is think of how now and always has he has, your father, stolen your personal power. How has he stolen that from you? Does this make you angry? Yeah. Do you want to stop? Yeah. So what I want you to do is fill out something for yourself in your own words, something like, after thinking about who they are, where they came from, what their motivations are, Or if you don't even understand them, you can just say, I understand that you behaved the way you did. And I'm so sorry that you're filled with pain that you feel that you had to inflict it on others and me in order to regain your own power. I refuse to let you hurt me anymore. I'm choosing to let go of the pain you've caused me for my own sake. All right, you can say things like this. You can write this down, something like this, Andrew. And I realize that letting go of this pain doesn't minimize or condone your bad behavior. But what it does is it validates my own worth as a person and my right to finally be free of your abuse. I'm choosing to take back my personal power so that I may heal. So I now release all the hurtful emotions I feel regarding your behavior. I am now free to heal and move on. I do not give you the power. I do not give you the power. No more. Done. Not going to do it. You know, because we suffer so long for so many years from being abused. So that's just an idea on how to work through some forgiveness for you, Andrew. And I thank you so much for emailing me and asking that question, because it is, it's really difficult to forgive someone who has hurt us. But it does take our power away. It does kind of can literally make us sick when we're stressed, angry, and resentful, and we can't forgive. All right? It's hard, but some ideas for you to do that. I wanted to read this email, too, while I'm talking about abusers in our life. This is an email from Kevin about his girlfriend. So thank you so much for emailing me, Kevin, at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Here on the couch. By the way, I've let everybody know that I'm going to be answering their emails today. I've responded back to them. And so hopefully you're listening, guys, and I'm helping you out a little bit. And all this stuff that I usually deal with, I try to find issues that apply to everybody. They're really general stuff that we all experience. So it can help you too. So here we go. My female partner is abusing me. Yeah. Not good, Kevin. My problem is the culmination of 3.5 years of living with and being patient with my current partner. She has finally accepted that she has a fear of intimacy and has sought psychological intervention. It's helped. But her behavior towards me during this time has left deep scars. Despite the fact that I've understood her problem and not just dumped her like all the other relationships. A therapist has described her abusive behavior towards me as, quote, best placed shots to keep us at a psychological distance. So what she does is constantly, she refuses having sex with me, while at the same time relating tales of past sexual encounters. Okay. She also keeps in touch with her ex-boyfriends behind my back. Oh, God. Come on, Kevin. She also tells me she only has sex with me to shut up. What? She's constantly telling me she doesn't like sex but has a series of one-night stands. Kevin. The worst damage was done by her disparaging remarks about how I can't really satisfy her. For the sake of briefness, Dr. Michelle, I haven't even touched the surface of her abusive tactics. Okay. Well, my first instinct, I have no idea what's led you to spend 3.5 years of living with this person, Kevin. And I can only imagine that you're an absolute saint, or that you like helping damsels in distress. the thing that just is kind of glowing to me here is that you're not very secure as a person, or maybe can't face being single again if you give up on the relationship. Maybe it's a combination of all three. So I wonder if it's only now that you've been able to face up to how awful it's been. I mean, sometimes, for example, people get through a really traumatic time only to, like, fall apart when it's over, you know? Or it's also possible that deep down you worry that if she becomes normal, which I don't think is going to happen, by the way, she may not want you, or that you're not deserving enough to have something normal and nice. Without meeting you face to face, it's really hard to kind of tell exactly what's going on. But you know what, Kevin? I think you need to go to a therapist alone to talk this all through. Because you need to really look at this abusive woman. I wouldn't honestly tell anyone to put up with this anymore. You're done. 3 years? Yipes. You're a saint, okay? I give you sainthood. Now, are you writing to me so you can seek approval for dumping her? Do you feel it's awful of you to want to do this now? Maybe that she's in therapy? I'm kind of feeling that from you. So if you're seeking this approval, do it. You have it. You have my approval. You know, my main concern is about you because you sound like a really nice guy. And unless your partner changes, I think you're going to continue to get worn out and hurt. Okay? You need to go get with a therapist who's a self-esteem expert. Because you kind of got to have low self-esteem to deal with someone who do all those things to you. Come on. It doesn't help being, you know, the person that someone can walk all over. And the more you do it, the more she'll do it. And even though she's getting therapy, and that's great, she has issues with opening up and intimacy, I don't know if you want to be that person hanging around. Because it takes a lot of work to get through those issues. So, yes, you have my permission, Kevin. Really think about this. And find somebody who's healthier. That's what I think. And I know your friends are saying that to you, too. Come on. I bet your family's saying that to you, too. Uh-huh. Right? Am I right? He's nodding right now. I can see on the other line. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. This is Dr. Michelle, and you're on the couch today, where I answer a lot of your questions about stuff. We're dealing with a lot of different things, relationship issues, forgiveness, we talked about a little bit earlier, how to deal with an abusive girlfriend. We just talked to Kevin about that. And I have a really kind of cool email from Jenny, who says she's tired of trying to meet guys online. And wants to know how to screen guys. Alrighty. How do we screen people? How do we get to know somebody if they're really mean? So she says, "Dear Doc, I'm a 26-year-old female bartender. I've been seeing this guy for a month. I've dated a lot of men, and I think that this guy may be the one." After a month, really? I don't know. "We get along great. We haven't had sex yet, and I'm really tired of having sex and getting dumped by guys I really like. I don't want to be a booty call anymore. The thing is that he gets me. We have the same sense of humor. But I want to know what kinds of things should I think about before it gets really serious so we can have a really successful relationship." So, I don't know. When you guys are really getting to know each other a little bit more, because it's been a month, and you said you haven't had sex with him, so you're still kind of getting to know him, which is fine. You know, and I'm sure you've learned a lot of stuff about him, as we do over a month. I don't know how often you've seen him, but a lot of times, a lot of people, when they're really kind of attracted to someone and they really get each other and have a great kind of vibe, then they start seeing each other really a lot. You know, the fire's happening during the first several months. So, I don't know. If you want to talk about things that would really be beneficial to you and you want to find out if this is the guy for you, I think I would just let things go naturally in terms of sex, because it seems like you're you know, doing the right thing by holding off, because we do get attached to guys, usually. We do bond with men when we have sex with them. So it's kind of tough. So, you find out what his intentions are. How long is he waiting, willing to wait before having sex? You might ask him that. I don't know. It might be a weird thing to ask, but you know, if you guys are really getting to know each other. So you can also, talk about spirituality or faith, because if you get deeper into a relationship, it can cause a lot of friction because, there's all these different issues with different religions and judgments and all that. So, I mean, that's a biggie to talk about. I hear that you're a bartender here in your email. Yeah, that's what you do. So that's really cool, Jim. But you might check out if he uses any kind of, drugs. Does he drink too much alcohol? I mean, you would know because probably as a bartender, I don't know where you are from in the country, but you're responsible for people, kind of having too many drinks, so you have to cut them off. So you got to just kind of make sure if, he abuses any substances, what's going on with him. That's a biggie in relationships. I always like to tell people to find out about a little bit about history, not details, about past relationships. What does he accept or not accept in a relationship? Is he a trustworthy guy? Does he expect monogamy? Is he really independent? Does he travel a lot and want to be on his own a lot? So this can show you what to expect in the relationship with another person. It's also fun to ask what kind of caused past relationships to end. See, because then you can kind of get a handle on behaviors or habits that he did that his girlfriends were complaining about. See, you just kind of get to know somebody that way. Find out what his interests are. Like I said a little bit earlier, if he's really independent and wants to be alone or do his thing a lot, that may not be good for you. And also if he has hobbies that may interfere with your relationship, take too much time up that, could be spent together, you got to find out stuff like that. And also if he gets really serious, you got to talk about things like, what do you want for your future? What's up with your... What's your financial plan? Now, that's kind of heavy stuff. Or find out how he's doing. If he keeps a job. Consistent. Has he been consistent in work? If you want kids, you better find out if he wants kids. Those are biggies. What's his family like? What was his upbringing like? So these are just some ideas for you to check out. Because, these are... Before you really get into something, this is what you can do to really warm up the conversation. But it takes a while to get into these subjects. So I would just say, slowly get to know each other. Take your time. And if you think he's the one, yeah, that's great. But just make sure that that's not the, I'm so attracted to him and he's real great. Just find out if he's the real deal. Because I really get from a lot of girls that they're tired of having sex and getting dumped by guys. They hit them and quit them. So I respect that. So Jenny, that's what you do. Find out a little bit more about the guys and get to know them. You'll see. I always ask people to make sure that they meet their family. And this doesn't mean you have to be really engaged to this person, or get to know their friends and family too. That'll tell you a lot about a person. Really will. Here we go. If you want to email me any questions or comments, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. I'm answering a lot of you guys' questions out there that have come to me over the past several weeks. I wanted to get to them because I promised you I would. And let you all know who emailed me that I'd be talking about your issues. And we don't have a therapeutic relationship, by the way. I'm just giving you some suggestions, ideas. I don't expect you to follow through. I'm just putting it out there. We don't do therapy together here on the radio. I'm just giving ideas. That's all I do. That's a nice name, Angel. I'm a pretty outgoing girl. People say I bring energy and my friendly, outgoing personality into social and work situations. But it kind of hurts me when I meet my boyfriends and their girlfriends. Oops. My boyfriends. Oh, my boyfriend's friends and their girlfriends, and some of them seem distant, like they don't like me. It really bothers me when people are standoffish, especially when I'm so outgoing. Why don't some people like me? All right, Angel, that's a valid question. I like that. I appreciate that. You sound like a really cool lady. You know who you are. You know, sounds like you know how to communicate. You know? So the thing is as much as you sound like you like being with other people, not everybody's going to like being with you. Not everybody likes us. You know? This is what I try to tell a lot of people pleasers, as we say. People pleasers. People pleasers. Got to be happy. Got to make everybody nice and happy. Because if it's not okay and happy, then it feels creepy and yucky. I get that from a lot of people who grew up in abusive or alcoholic homes. I got to be that one that's all entertaining and making everybody happy and nicey nice. Because it's so uncomfortable when they argue. Parents argue. Everybody gets into an argument, so I'm going to be the nice person in the family. So the thing is you sound gregarious and warm and all that, but it's not everybody's cup of tea, Angel. Some people are a lot more cautious than you in personal encounters. And some people, you say, you know, everybody likes you at work. That's great. But a lot of people think the workplace should be more formal, more impersonal. You know, they just a little more standoffish, which is fine. You know, also there's a thing to consider that some people who may want more of the spotlight will find you too much to compete with. Once you get your outgoing self in motion and you're fun and lively and all that stuff, you know what I'm saying? So people sometimes just are not ready to accept, or they're suspicious of people who are too friendly, too outgoing, too nice. Oh, haven't you heard that before? She's too nice. Something must be wrong with her. Well, it just depends. There's a fine line. You know, is that person too nice because they're insecure and want to be accepted? Got to think about those things, Angel. Is that true? You know? Also think about this. It sounds like you've been really warm and open, and you relate to a lot of people for a long time. But for some people, it's brand new to them, because you kind of don't know where they're coming from, and a lot of people may be protecting something inside themselves. You know, they may have some fear or guilt or shame. Or some private part of their story that they're not ready to share. And your openness and your outgoingness and all that might threaten them. So they'll take a step back and be reluctant the next time you engage with them in any kind of little too warm and fuzzy exchange. They might find it a little dangerous. Because of maybe their upbringing, or they've been hurt by people who are outgoing or gregarious, or they've been exposed to people who are a little more narcissistic, who come off very charming and wonderful and then stab you in the back. So you've got to, you know, it sounds like most people will probably be glad to be in the room you're in, and that you make the environment at work livelier, and people probably like you, and, you know, makes work happier when you have a nice employee like you, Angel. And you might also be helpful to some people. You know, there are those out there who need to talk but aren't very good at it. So, you know, they don't know how to start the conversation or feel that you're too outgoing, and they might feel judged because they can't meet your level of outgoingness. So sometimes you can help people by just giving them a little encouragement to come out of their shell and not be too intrusive. Just be really, you know, ask them questions that are not too deep, and don't be too touchy-feely. Get some space, you know. But I would say that, it's really lovely that you have this outgoing personality and people like you. And this is, wouldn't it be great if everybody was like this in the world? But again, why people don't like you, why some people don't like you, again, honey, no, not everybody's going to like you. Not everybody's going to like us. And it's not maybe your personality. I mean, there's a lot of other things going on, like I just said, with other people. They feel a little intimidated by you. They feel like coming from maybe a little more reserved home that you're too outgoing for them. They're, you know, untrustworthy. Maybe they've been hurt, like I said, by someone who seems gregarious or outgoing, and they trusted them and then got stung. So they pull back from that kind of personality. So it's great that you have energy and keep it up, but be, you know, a little more, I don't know, appropriate. Kind of feel people out. And don't be too warm and fuzzy and touchy and all that stuff, because some people, a lot of people don't like it. And that's okay. Doesn't mean you're a bad person if they don't like you. Not everybody likes us. You should get the emails I get. You should come on over here, Angel, and read my emails. Yeah, no. But anyway, this is Dr. Michelle, and you're on the couch here on LA Talk Radio. What I'm doing today is, as I mentioned, answering a lot of your questions and comments, just kind of dealing with, you know, some of the unresolved issues you may have. And I want to also stress that we don't have a therapy relationship. I'm not giving therapy on the air. I don't do that. What I do is I just give ideas. Just give some ideas, suggestions, because I've seen a lot of people who've gone through, you know, a lot of stuff for the past almost 20 years in my practice. So I try to offer suggestions, things like that. You know, just to help you out. All right? I think it's a good idea. So we're moving on here. And folks out there who emailed me, I've contacted you. Hopefully you're listening, that I'm going to answer your question today on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Let's see here. Oh, talking about workplace. This is cool. I like this one a lot. This is from Sean. Sean says, I'm way too stressed in my life right now. Work is crazy. My boss is an asshole. Uh-oh. My wife goes out of town for work and leaves me to help my dad, who is alone and has Parkinson's. Seems like I'm doing everything and I'm overwhelmed in my life. I'm glad we don't have kids right now, because I'd be a nutcase. Please help me with some tips on how to manage my stress. Aw. Well, do know probably, Sean, hopefully, that your wife is experiencing the stress too. But if she's working hard and going out of town, she probably, you know, kind of gets a little break from it. And if she has to work to help pay the bills with you, this is her job right now. And I'm sure you've accepted that. So just kind of realize that, Sean. But, you know, there's so much damage that stress can cause. You know, stress is related to physiological breakdown as well. And, of course, you said you don't want to be a nutcase. So, and I appreciate you putting it like that. I think it's true. I mean, how much stress is just too much? It really differs from person to person. And some people can roll with the punches. And you sounds like you have a lot of punches going on, Sean. Oof. But some people, they crumble at the slightest obstacle or frustration. You know, and there are other people I see who thrive on the excitement and challenge of a high-stress lifestyle. You know, those type A personalities that say, bring it on. I work better when I'm under stress. Well, your ability to tolerate stress depends on a lot of factors. So, Sean, I want you to just think about this. It kind of hinges on the quality of your relationship and your relationships and your general outlook on life and what's called your EQ, or emotional intelligence, actually. So let me just suggest that you get some things going for yourself here. It sounds like you have a lot happening in your life, and I'm so sorry you're dealing with you know, your dad who has Parkinson's. It's a very debilitating disease, and they do have medications that can help. But I experienced that with a family member in my life, and very tough to watch. Very tough to watch. So if you're caring for your dad, you're a great guy, and you're a good man, and you're working, and you're married, which is good. So what's really important for you, Sean, is your support network. So hopefully you have a strong network of supportive friends and family members, because it could be an enormous buffer against life stressors. You know, if you're lonely and isolated and tried to deal with this a lot, and I know you said your wife has to work out of town, the greater your vulnerability is to stress, you kind of need to get a support network. Okay? I would say get with a really good therapist who specializes in managing stress. Also, you've got to have a, you know, really healthy sense of control. You know? People who are vulnerable to stress tend to feel like things are out of control. You got to know what you can't control in your life. You can't control your dad's illness. You can't control, you know, your boss. You know, you've got to find a way to work with him if you're not going to quit and you need the money right now. So it's really, you've got to realize what you can and what you can't control in your life. And I always tell people that you can only control your thoughts and your actions, your behaviors. That's all you can control. Can't fix or control other people. Or you can try, but people won't like it, you know. You can also try to control your attitude and outlook. You're doing the best you can right now. You're doing the best you can. A lot of people who are faced with stress and feel out of control in their life feel like, I could be doing more. I should, but I can't. So people who can handle stress better have a more of an optimistic attitude. You know, they accept that change is part of life, and if you have a belief system, you know, of some kind to keep you strong, it's great. And of course, what's really important too to manage the stress going on in your life is your ability to deal with your emotions, Sean. You're extremely vulnerable to stress right now. So you have to keep those emotions in balance. And the more you know about a stressful situation going on, or lots in your life, including how long it'll last and what to expect, the easier it is to cope. So you've got to just sort of like know how to kind of calm and soothe yourself. Like I said, go to a therapist who's a specialist in managing stress. Try to let go of your anger and frustrations when you can. Get into a support group. You know, of people who are helping ill relatives, especially when the prognosis is not that good. You know, try to deal with your energy, get some exercise, eat well. You know, get a good support system around you of family and friends who can help you. And really, I hope you and your wife have a good relationship. Join in each other's, you know, ability to talk and work out stuff. Okay. What causes stress depends on, at least in part, your perception of it. So you've got to have those coping skills. So take good care of yourself. Do some of those things that I suggested for you, and hopefully you'll feel better. And I appreciate you so much for emailing me, Sean. You know, there's so many ways to cope with stress. There's so many websites that talk about coping with stress. So do that. And like I said, really try to get someone you can talk to who is a specialist in managing stress. All right, we're just about out of time here on the couch. You can stay on the couch if you like. More great shows coming up here on LA Talk Radio. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and I've had a lot of real good times today helping you out with your stuff. Hopefully I could do so. Hopefully a lot of these things apply to many listeners too. So thanks again for listening. All right, listen, next week, more great, great stuff coming up with one of the best authors I have ever interviewed, talking about managing stress, controlling your fearful thoughts, and taking good care of yourself. All right, have a good one, and I'll talk to you later. Always remember, it's best to take care of yourself first, and then you'll be good for others. Have a good one. Bye-bye now. Tonight, seeing flashing rays of coming light.